Thank you very much. Thanks for the invitation and congratulations for putting on such a fantastic event. I'm aware of two things acutely. Firstly, that my slot is the last slot before lunch. And secondly, that I've got too much to say in that slot. So I'll get a move on and hopefully what I say will hang together. At the moment in Britain, there's an election campaign going on. It's a general election on the 7th of May. And the one thing you will not see on Britain's television screens are paid for political advertisements. Because in the United Kingdom, there is a statutory ban on all political ads. And I gather in Hungary, there's some issues about this at the moment. There's a similar regime which has recently been introduced. In the United Kingdom, political parties standing with candidates can have access to free airtime on the main terrestrial channels, but there's no access to paid broadcasting time. It's this ban that I'm going to be looking at today. And I'm going to be looking at, first of all, some of the background principles behind the ban. Secondly, the ban itself in the United Kingdom. Thirdly, challenges to such bans under the jurisprudence of the European Court of Human Rights. And I'm going to conclude with a discussion about a recent change of direction by the European Court in a case called Animal Defenders International, the volte-face of the title. Most of my slides are funny pictures. I apologise for that. As we've heard already, freedom of expression is the sine qua non of political democracy. You simply can't have democracy without freedom of expression. You can't have freedom of expression without democracy. The two go hand in hand. The courts particularly like this justification for freedom of expression. It's tangible. They can grab hold of it. And in particular, when there are interferences with freedom of political expression, the courts are very willing to step up to the plate and protect the speaker. Many, many judicial dicta indicate that. In particular, the jurisprudence of the European Court of Human Rights has been very strong in its protection of political expression. As far back as the 1986, the case of Lingens in Austria, emblematic phrase, freedom of political debate is at the very core of the concept of democratic society, which prevails throughout the convention. And a long line of famous cases extolling this principle. But, and there's always a but, sometimes too much freedom of expression can undermine or threaten democracy itself. In particular, if we value equality of opportunity in the democratic process, it can tilt the level playing field of debate. In particular, again, in the context of broadcasting. We've heard a lot about the internet this morning, but perhaps still, television is one of the most powerful ways of reaching a huge number of people simultaneously. It's incredibly still a powerful medium, and it's also very expensive. And the problem, of course, is that if rich people or rich interests buy up large swathes of advertising time, they can persuade the electorate to their way of thinking, and the political process will be distorted. I'm not going to give you many quotes, but I love this one from Barack Obama's friend, Cass Sunstein. People who are able to organise themselves in such a way as to be able to spend large amounts of cash should not be able to influence politics more than people who are not similarly able. It is most troublesome if people with a good deal of money are allowed to translate their wealth into political influence. It is equally troublesome if the electoral process translates poverty into an absence of political influence. And of course, the great bogeyman in this context of the United States, where the British judge, Lady Hale, said recently that sometimes it looks as though elections are little more than in an auction. The winner goes to the highest bidder. So I want to turn now to Europe, and in particular to the United Kingdom, very aware of the bogeyman status of the United States. We have a Communications Act 2003, which effectively imposes a blanket ban on all political advertising in the broadcast media. Section 321 is incredibly broad, and it's not just party political matters upon which advertising is banned. It's much, much broader than that. Just going to very brief summary of the types of advertisements and the types of bodies which are not allowed to advertise. Anything which influences the outcome of elections, okay. Anything which tries to bring about or influence a change in the law. Anything influencing the legislative process or promoting the interests of political parties. Influencing the policies of governments or persons on whom public functions are conferred by law or international agreements. And those apply to trying to influence these things anywhere in the world. And finally, political includes influencing public opinion on a matter which, in the UK, is a matter of public controversy. So it's such a broad prohibition that when Parliament were pushing through this legislation, the UK government didn't feel that it could comply with Article 10 of the European Convention on Human Rights, or thought there's a possibility that it might not. It's the only act to go through since the Human Rights Act, which has got a statement saying that we maybe think that this law is not compliant with human rights standards. Another related question is, when such a ban is challenged before the courts, what should the approach of the court be? Should it be activist? Should it stand up in a powerful way for the individual freedom of expression, or the freedom of expression of the person taking part in the political process? Or should it be self-restrained? Should it hold itself back, conceding that legislatures elected by the people are better placed to make this sort of call than mere judges? And that's a thread which runs through what I'm about to talk about. Little bit of a risk here. I'm going to show a film which was made by this organisation, Animal Defenders International. It is an NGO, companion organisation for animal rights. It's non-charitable. And they wanted to publicise the rights of the higher apes, primates. So I hope this is going to work. No, that's wrong. Ah, sausage, I've given the game away there, haven't I? I'll wake you up before dinner anyway. There's nothing bad in it, don't worry.
A chimp has the mental and emotional age of a four-year-old child. Although they share 98% of our genetic makeup, they are still caged and abused to entertain us. Please make a donation.
And that was the ad. And they wanted to broadcast that to publicise the plight of chimpanzees and gorillas and instigate change in policy, change in the law. Their organisation, the ADA, Animal Defenders, wanted to instigate change in the law. So they therefore considered a political organisation. On that basis, the ad was prohibited. So Animal Defenders challenged the ban. And they claimed that this broad ban, which was introduced in order to maintain the level playing field in political democracy, okay, fair enough. If you want to stop wealthy interests buying up swathes of political airspace so that the political process isn't distorted. But ADI said, well, we're not that kind of organisation. And yet this ban catches us. It therefore must be a disproportionate interference with our Article 10, our free speech rights under the European Convention on Human Rights. But the British courts, and it ended up in the House of Lords before it became the Supreme Court, found that to have such a ban, well, it was legitimate to have some restriction. Everyone agreed that, to maintain a level playing field. But here, the government argued that if we have a more nuanced ban, which takes account of the differences between the types of organisation, that would lead to all sorts of problems. It would lead to difficult, acrimonious disputes about whether a particular advert falls this side or that side of the line. And it's far easier just to have a complete, simple, bright line rule which bans it all. The British court said, yeah, really, we think that's fair enough. And actually, the organisation best placed to make that decision is Parliament. Parliament knows the ins and outs of the functioning of democracy, and it's far better placed than a mere court to be able to make that decision. So they lose their challenge in the United Kingdom. Now, they take their case to the Strasbourg court, and certainly when I was researching this at the time, I thought, well, they're going to win, and it's going to be really embarrassing for Britain, because the jurisprudence of the court is famously very, very protective of political expression, and in particular, on the question of political broadcasting and political advertising, the court has given only a very narrow margin of appreciation to states when they wish to interfere. The leading case was the sausage case, VGT, Verein gegen Tierfabriken, and Switzerland. Another animal rights case, VGT produced, now there's a similar blanket ban on broadcast advertising in Switzerland. VGT made an ad juxtaposing pigs in the forest in the rural idyll with factory farmed pigs squealing about to go to the abattoir, and finished with the caption, eat less meat for the sake of the environment, the animals and your health. That advert fell foul of the Swiss ban. VGT took their case to Strasbourg, and in that case the Strasbourg court said, fair enough to have some restrictions on political expression and political advertising to maintain the level playing field, to prevent distortion. We can accept that. But VGT never could distort the process. They are not the sort of organisation which could bring about this kind of distortion. So on that basis, the European Court found, quite controversially, that it was a disproportionate interference. It wasn't necessary in Swiss democratic society to have this absolute blanket ban on political ads. Subsequent case, which I'll not go into, involved the Pensioners' Party of Norway. Couldn't get any airtime. They brought a similar kind of claim in a situation in Norway where there's a similar kind of ban. European Court upheld their case too. It's important that little political actors, in this case a political party rather than NGO, could have access to the process through buying advertising time. So when ADI, when Animal Defenders take their case to Strasbourg, it looks fairly good, a good prospect that they might win. Everyone agrees that some limitations on political ads are legitimate in order to protect democracy before the European Court of Human Rights. The real question was whether such a wide broadcasting ban, covering not just wealthy political actors, but also social advocacy groups posing themselves no threat to democracy, was a proportionate interference. And after waiting for a very long time, even by European court standards, 13 months, by 9-8, the Grand Chamber found no violation of Article 10, because the Communications Act was considered to be a proportionate restriction on freedom of expression in order to preserve, firstly, the impartiality of broadcasters and to protect the integrity of the democratic process, which corresponds to, in paragraph 2 of Article 10, the rights of others. Now, the crucial step in the decision-making of the European Court was to categorise this ban as a general measure. It didn't call it a blanket ban, it called it a general measure. And it comes up with this principle that in order to determine the proportionality of a general measure, the court must primarily assess the legislative choices underlying it. So what's the decision-making process? What's the reasoning process which led to this general measure? The quality of parliamentary and judicial review of the necessity of the measure and the risk of abuse if the general measure were to be relaxed were both a question that were primarily for the state to assess. So this is the activism thing. This is the court setting up a position where it's going to hold itself back. Where a system of case-by-case examination would give rise to a significant risk of uncertainty, then it was more likely that a general measure would be found to be a more feasible means of achieving a legitimate aim. In other words, where you're going to have to make difficult decisions, and it's far easier to have a complete general measure ban, then we'll give the benefit of the doubt to the state. The more convincing the reasons given for the general measure, the more importance the court will attach to its impact in a particular case. Here, in the run-up to the Communications Act ban, there'd been a really... This is interesting. Because of the VGT decision, the sausage case, the British Parliament and government thought that it might not comply with Article 10. So they really went to town on the debate. They had a really good ventilation of the issues. And the European Court liked that. You've had a really good discussion about this. Also, there's no consensus on this across Europe, so we're inclined to give you a margin of appreciation. And also, the ban only applied to TV and radio. We've just seen the ad on the internet. You can see it on the internet. They could put posters up. They could put flyers out. They could have public protests. All sorts of avenues were available. They could also set up a charitable arm, which would be exempt from the ban. So what, this is me this, the Grand Chamber seems to be saying that an all-encompassing ban, which has a legitimate aim, but which catches within its broad sweep or fine mesh those who themselves pose no threat to democracy, is likely to be found proportionate as long as there's been a proper debate by the legislature that introduced it. Now, I have some points of criticism. I'll run through them quite briefly. Firstly, it seems to radically water down the principle of proportionality as traditionally employed by the European Court of Human Rights. It becomes a review of the quality of debate in the Parliament that passed the legislation and possibly of the courts which reviewed it on afterwards, rather than the impact on the individual in the particular case, which we thought, forgive me, what human rights were all about. The emphasis now is on the questions of whether the reasons given are relevant and sufficient. And there's a danger that it'll become a kind of box-ticking exercise in terms of debate. As long as the state goes through all the procedures, has all the relevant debates, ticks all the right boxes procedurally in getting to its blanket ban, that's going to give a big impetus to its being found to be not in breach of Article 10 at any subsequent Strasbourg hearing. And there's a weird thing here. Imagine a state that passes an exact same ban. One state has lots of debate. The other state does exactly the same thing, but doesn't have much of a debate. Well, in that situation, it looks like with the same law, one state's going to be in breach and the other state is not, which is problematic, it seems to me. There's another irony. We only had the big debate in the UK because of the Swiss case, the sausage case. If there hadn't been that jurisprudence before of the European Court before the Parliament of the United Kingdom, they wouldn't have had the debate. They'd probably just passed it through. So that's a bit of an irony, really. Second part of criticism, what's the difference really between a general measure and a blanket ban? It's very hard to distinguish those two things. I'll not dwell on that, but I could maybe answer it in questions later. Seems to be a problematic distinction. A lot of the argument now is going to be, one side's going to be claiming it's a general measure. The other side's going to be saying, no, it's a blanket ban. It's going to be an argument over categories. What about VGT and Pensioners Party? Those important free speech cases. Switzerland, Norway and Denmark changed their law after those cases. It wasn't okay to have the ban. But the UK, it is okay to have a ban. But why? Just because of the debate that took place beforehand? Powerful dissents by eight of the judges. Final point, I'm out over time, is the freedom of expression point, really. All the dissenting judges made this point. This is a ban which concerns the most protected form of expression, discussion on matters of public interest, by one of the most important categories of actors in the democratic process, an NGO. And a form of media which remains influential, even with the rise of the internet, without the least exception. It is a blanket ban in that sense. Back to the silly pictures. Think about it. A court car manufacturer can advertise as much as it wants, to the extent of its finances, to advertise its SUVs and its sports cars and so forth. But an NGO wishing to publicise the plight of the environment, a politically controversial issue, will not be able to do so, will not be able to respond. Fast food manufacturers. Yeah! Burger King, Big Mac, KFC. Anyone who wants to say, oh, Cole, don't feed your kids that stuff, guys. Political, controversial. Clothing manufacturers, sports shoe manufacturers. Yeah! Nike, Adidas, all that stuff. The guy that wants to say, look, think about where this is coming from. Why is it so cheap? Not allowed. I think I'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. A truly fascinating intervention from Mr. Lewis, so Professor Lewis. So, it's time for the Q&As. Kérdések. Please.
Can I do it in English?
Of course.
Just asking you, who was the 94? How did the UK judge vote on this case?
He did a separate concurring opinion with the majority. So he and he actually added a bit more weight to that from the majority from the British perspective. Yeah. Did Bratzer.
And you. In your note, you had two or three judges, one of the Hungarian judge there.
Yeah.
But they were dissenting judges.
They were dissenting judges, correct.